When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local businesses like Madison Computer Works, SNR Remodeling, and St. Vincent de Paul. Joining us now from the Center for Media and Democracy, Mary Batari. Mary, you've been very busy lately.
We have been very busy lately.
The first thing I want to talk a little bit about is this plot from the Koch brothers and Alec to do more damage to public sector workers, which really means doing more damage to small businesses, doing more damage to the American economy, and essentially making this a right-to-work country. Can you tell us what's going on?
Well, on top of our expose about the Bradley Foundation over the summer and their, you know, huge funding stream to dismantle unions nationwide, we uncovered another set of documents related to another player in this map of players who are all working together on the strategy. And this other player is called the State Policy Network. And some folks know about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's a $9 million, you know, group of legislators and lobbyists who get together to cook up model bills behind closed doors that can be very harmful to the American public. On top of that, there's a $90 million organization called the State Policy Network, which pursues a lot of the same agenda and works hand-in-hand with ALEC. And we uncovered documents from them that were launching a $9 million campaign. So you remember ALEC's a $9 million organization. This group wants to launch a one-time $9 million campaign to defund and defang unions in key states.
Well, states like Illinois?
States like Illinois, for instance. We found two things that the State Policy Network was keeping under wraps. One was their State Workplace Freedom Toolkit.
Oh, there we go.
And, you know, they couch these things in terms of workers' rights and workplace freedom. But the second thing we found was their fundraising letter for this project, which they called Breakthrough 2016. And the fundraising letter, you know, puts to rest any notion that they're engaging these activities to help the American worker. I mean, it's highly, highly political. They want to defund and defang unions in order to defund the left, in order to flip states from blue to red. And they say things like, we've already transformed a handful of key states, formerly in deep blue states. Imagine the impact we can have if we expand this freedom wave to half the states or more.
Well, so, no one should be surprised if they're doing this. How do you come across this stuff?
Very good research.
Is it hard to uncover?
It's sometimes hard to uncover, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that we're paying attention. We really watch what these groups and institutions do. So, like, everybody was like, how did you do the Bradley Files expose? Well, part of the reason we found the Bradley Files is because the Bradley Foundation put out a very small press release saying, oops, we've been hacked, and we've been reported to the FBI. And we went, huh, they've been hacked? That's so weird. What's that about? And that's how we found those documents. So we pay attention, and we can uncover some of these things. And this particular set of documents was featured in the Guardian newspaper, which did an incredibly good article called Right Wing Alliance Plots Assault to Defund and Defang American Unions. And the article makes it really crystal clear that this is a political agenda. This is a political agenda to advance the Republican Party, its candidates, and its interests, to defund and demobilize people who traditionally, but not always, go to bat for Democrats in an election cycle. And you know, there are still lawsuits going up to the Supreme Court that may decide the fate of public sector unions in the future. So these types of documents, which show the real agenda, the real way they talk about these things behind the scenes, are really important.
And, you know, we were all a little taken back at the breadth of Act 10. But if you look at what happened in Indiana and what they did there, there wasn't a codified law in Indiana. But as soon as Mitch Daniels came into office, he ripped up the agreement that Governors O'Bannon and Bayh had with public sector unions. We should have been able to see this coming, right?
Right, but you know what? People don't talk about it that much.
Talk about unions at all. let me give you a hint. I did not see one story or even a mention of Labor Day weekend until they showed a parade on a channel or two. Literally didn't even say Labor Day.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, or even review what the history is.
Mention to it whatsoever. It's a pretty remarkable process. So when they do this in states, just because of the structure of our political system, you know, Democrats generally have been the party that's more in favor of labor unions, although at one time that Republicans were far more amenable to unions. But they've literally turned a whole bunch of states into one-party states. And I think of Wyoming. I think of Oklahoma. I know we all kind of chuckle about Oklahoma, but Oklahoma was a two-party state. Then came Right to Work. Then came this. Then came that. And then suddenly they're able to kind of basically end democracy in these states. They're one-party rule.
That's right. Then they gerrymander. Then they end democracy for 10 years or more. And it's very hard to reverse once that kind of situation gets locked in through gerrymandering.
So this is essentially corporate interests trying to suppress wages and stifle democracy. And yet they sell themselves as libertarians. This is ultimately a more dangerous form of big government, isn't it?
It is. It's a corporatist government. So, I mean, look what's happening here in Wisconsin with Foxconn. So now they're free to give away $3 billion. And however much people protest or raise questions about that, those questions aren't being answered. And those guarantees aren't coming through.
I'm going to play a couple clips, by the way, Mary Batari with us from the Center for Media and Democracy. PRWatch.org is a great place to go to stay informed on all this. As you know, State Senator Lee Avukmir, who was from Wauwatosa but has moved to the liberal bastion of Brookfield now, is running for the U.S. Senate. I'm going to play a couple clips of her. She was on with Mike Huchet on the Upfront program a couple weeks ago. Here's State Senator Lee Avukmir.
And then, of course, Act 10. Once I got into the state Senate to be a part of that historic reform that, quite frankly, has laid the groundwork for all of the other reforms that we've been able to do leading up to Foxconn today. So I can't just hang my head on one.
What's your reaction to that?
That is pretty funny. That is a good clip. I've never heard that. That's quite a reform, a $3 billion Foxconn. So she gets rid of jobs and gets rid of good wages in order to go to the Foxconn jump out the window model.
Uh-huh.
The thing about Lee Avukmir, you know, and she was, of course, like the vice chair of ALEC, and then she became the chair of ALEC in 2015. She chaired them for over a year. But before and after and during this entire period, she introduced and supported ALEC model bill after ALEC model bill after ALEC model bill in Wisconsin. And among the list of ALEC bills that are sort of the most shocking to me are the bills that literally crush wages. I mean, they do nothing but do that. So they've gone after prevailing wage once, twice. Now they're going to go after it a third time, I believe. I'm sort of losing count. I mean, how can you defend tearing down wages in a state where that's the single most, jobs and wages are the single most important issue? And she seems to get away with it, not only because they have they live in this right-wing echo chamber in their little heads and in their little building, but they're not being challenged very hard by the media in the state. It's very rarely does she introduce or push through an ALEC model bill where it's ever acknowledged as such.
Well, and of course, she stays in power because she was elected in a wave year in a somewhat competitive district. And then, of course, we learn through the corrupt practice of gerrymandering in this state that Leah Vukmir was one of the most vociferous advocates for her getting to pick her own voters. She did not want Milwaukee wards in her district. Here is another clip of State Senator Leah Vukmir.
That was quickly followed by somebody from the State Democratic Party, Martha Lanning, the chairwoman, who said that you were a national leader of a billionaire's special interest group. Well, that's obviously a reference to your association, close association with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. How are you going to respond to that in the course of the campaign?
Sure. The left, of course, is very fearful that I am going to be the person that is taking on Tammy and that I will have a very strong campaign against her. I'm proud of my association with an organization that believes in limited government, free markets, and federalism. Anyone who knows me knows that those are the principles that got me elected. Those are the principles I used on day one when I knocked on doors. I really believe that the government closest to the people is the best government to solve the problems for the people. And we've gotten so far away from that, so we need voices in Washington that are going to say, you know what, this isn't the role of the federal government. We need to have people who are going to be strong enough and will actually do that. I'm not afraid to speak up. People know my record here in Wisconsin.
You don't see yourself. They're going to say she is beholden to the special corporate interest, that this is a Koch brothers group, and she's carrying out the mission of billionaires.
That's all they have to say. And if anyone really takes the time to understand what ALEC is all about, it is an organization that exchanges ideas with legislators across the country, Republicans and Democrats, about what's best policy. I mean, it is a phenomenal organization. I'm very proud to lead that organization. So, of course, they're going to be, you know, pulling out all kinds of things because they know that I am a strong candidate, that I'm a person who stands up for what she believes in, and I actually get things done.
Your reaction to that?
Well,
you enjoy the clips I brought for you today, Mary?
Those are great clips. I haven't heard them. So, well, I'm glad she's embracing the Koch brothers because they certainly have embraced her over the years. And this is, it's sort of not a joke because the Koch brothers on the ground machine is getting more and more and more sophisticated. In the last election cycle, when Ron Johnson was running, they had, by our count, at least 9 offices open statewide. And by the last day, they had all these meeting spots. And somebody told me that there were 16 offices. Now, I can't confirm that, but there were 16 offices where they paid young people, often just teenagers, to go door to door to door, not just dropping lit with pictures of Ron Johnson and saying great things about him, but also doing very sophisticated voter analysis on tablets. And they don't just knock on Republican doors, they knock on every door. And so this is a very big machine that is likely to get behind her in this election cycle and really work the grassroots as well as doing their big ad buys and all those kinds of things.
They really did not want Russ Feingold to return to the United States Senate.
They really did not. I wish there were more sort of aggressive reporters in the state, because I don't believe this was reported in the state that there were 9 offices and 16 offices.
There's another connection between Leah Vukmir and what took place, and that was Diane Hendricks put a lot of money into the effort to reelect Ron Johnson, and now she is going to fund a large part of Leah Vukmir's campaign.
Right. Right. So, you know, Diane Hendricks is a member of the Koch network. She has given them over $1 million, and she's going to be their community captain on the ground here, working hard for Leah Vukmir. So this is going to be a very, very interesting race. The other thing she said that just made me crack up was that it's a bipartisan organization. I think the involvement of Chris Taylor here in Madison technically makes it a bipartisan organization, but I bet you she's one of the only Democrats there. And Chris Taylor, as you know, attends to figure out what the heck they're up to and write blogs on what they're doing. And funnily enough, we've heard through another source that they do talk about her as making the organization bipartisan, and some of them even seem to believe it.
Would it be fair to say that Leah Vukmir is the Koch candidate?
I think that would be fair to say.
All right.
I think that would be fair to say. We'll see. I guarantee you we're going to see Americans for Prosperity having a very big role.
Mary Battari with us from the Center for Media and Democracy. We'll take a break right here at sliceoffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Mary Battari with us at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. All right, let's talk about some of the other things that the PR Watch and the Center for Media and Democracy are covering right now. Let's talk a little bit about this gerrymandering case that's before the United States Supreme Court. Explain what's going on.
Well, in 2011, while many groups and organizations marched around the Capitol protesting Act 10, right in that big glass bank that faces the Capitol, folks were working night and day on maps to gerrymander the state. I mean, we didn't know it was happening then, but it was happening right there. And they used very sophisticated computer modeling, and they contracted with political scientists and statisticians to crunch and crunch and crunch our districts so that they looked similar, but included a lot more Republicans in the Republican districts, and they crunched the Democrats into a fewer number of districts. And so as a consequence, this gives them a huge leg up, 10 seats or so in the legislature, and sort of makes their control, what the statisticians say, durable, but really kind of permanent. And it makes sort of an imperial legislature. So this a case challenging this was brought by Bill Whitford and a number of voters in Wisconsin on very interesting grounds and groundbreaking grounds, and it was upheld by a 3-judge federal panel. 2 of those judges were appointed by Republicans. It's been sent to the U.S. Supreme Court. U.S. Supreme Court will hear it October 3rd, and 50 amicus briefs have been filed on both sides. On the side of gerrymandering, comes a whole raft of Republican organizations with the name Republican in their in their name. And on the other side is a really diverse group of academics, Republicans, Democrats, current politicians, former politicians, experts, voting rights experts, community people, all sorts of things, including the Center for Media and Democracy. We filed a brief in that case.
With the addition of Mr. Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, does it make it almost impossible to win this case in the court?
I think that most people would think it's hopeless. However, the experts know that Kennedy has, for a long time, Justice Kennedy has for a long time been worried about partisan gerrymandering. He knows that it can be done by Democrats. He knows it can be done by Republicans. He knows it's very anti-democratic. And he has said on numerous occasions, how do we know how much is too much? Is there some sort of objective measure that can tell us how much is too much? And that's what these plaintiffs are trying to do. They're trying to give them an objective measure of wasted votes so that Democrats can win the statewide vote by wide margins, yet be way underrepresented in the legislature. It's a problem. And if you're an intelligent person, a judge or a politician, you know it can be done by either party. So this is not a Republican versus Democratic issue. Very prominent Republicans like Senator John McCain, Arnold Schwarzenegger, other people have signed on some of these amicus briefs arguing about it. Now, our amicus brief was done in response to the amicus brief filed by the Wisconsin legislature. And we thought the Wisconsin legislature's brief was really a little bit of a hoot. They paint a picture of Wisconsin being sort of a bastion of democracy and all these competitive elections happening all over the place. And in fact, there were 75 contested elections recently that generated a lot of interest by voters. And this image of all these contested elections and the burgeoning of democracy in Wisconsin is complete hooey.
Republicans have made the argument that this one-sided looking map is partly due to the fact that young people more likely to be Democrats or progressives, concentrate themselves in urban areas now, that we have more clustering with the way people move to locations where they're with like-minded people.
Right. Unfortunately, the data shows that they crunched and crunched and crunched and crunched the numbers to make that more and more and more compact. I mean, in the some of the briefs they talk about, they say things like, voters look at the candidate's record, they look at the candidate's, you know, they look at the candidate's clothes, all these things. And that's just not true anymore. Voters in Wisconsin, voters in Wisconsin vote pretty much along party lines. Although it's true that there are more Democrats in Madison and Milwaukee, an effort to crunch all these voters, not just there, but all over the state, to pack the Democrats into smaller and smaller number of seats, really guarantees Republican control of the state forever. And yet this has always been a purple state with a very diverse diverse voting patterns. And the way this was done, the experts tell us, is the worst gerrymandering, worst partisan gerrymandering that has ever been done in U.S. history. And so if it doesn't present an interesting case for the court, I'm not sure what will.
All right, let's talk about a couple other issues. You're covering the trade talks, obviously, the renegotiation of NAFTA. The president talked a pretty good line. It was the one thing I agree. I certainly applaud President Trump for canceling the TPP. And he talked a pretty good line about NAFTA. I never thought he completely understood the notion of how these trade deals are structured. But what is going on with the effort to repeal some of the bad provisions in NAFTA?
Well, he did talk a good line about the harms that NAFTA has caused the United States, and that is for sure true. I mean, we lost something like 50,000 factories under NAFTA. But it looks like, coming out of these negotiations, that these renegotiations are starting to look a lot like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that a lot of the same corporate entities that used to sit on these boards at the U.S. Trade Representative's office and have vast access to the negotiating documents, they're still there. They're still pushing the same agenda. So we have American corporations pushing for a worsening even a worse trade deal between between the NAFTA countries than ever before. And we're not seeing that counterbalance. I mean, the first thing that he should have done is, you know, swept away the old trade negotiating process and created a new one, which was a lot more democratic. But he hasn't done that. So we're seeing a lot of the same players at the table making these bad trade deals.
And, of course, this might have been the one issue that would have been good to have Steve Bannon in the White House.
Well, that's possible that he might have brought a more populist feel to this, but I mean, when you've put Goldman Sachs in charge of your White House and you've put Goldman Sachs representative sort of in charge of the trade arena, it's really kind of a problem. Goldman Sachs has been negotiating a trade agreement with China on behalf of the United States for a long time, and that could have been one of the first things to go, but that didn't go. So it looks like the Goldman Sachs folks really are gaining the upper hand in the White House.
So one final issue here as we wrap up today, different things we're keeping an eye on. There's radio talk show host Mark Levin, who's one of the crazier talk show hosts out there, for years has been pushing this constitutional convention where essentially they want to do a balanced budget amendment, but then God knows what else will get added. Give us the status of that.
Well, this has been a concerning development because there have been competing, sort of modestly competing factions trying to pull off a constitutional convention to pass a balanced budget amendment. It's never gotten through Congress. Members of Congress know that you need to have flexibility in the way you budget at the federal level. The U.S. right now is facing catastrophe after catastrophe. Puerto Rico is getting hit right now by a new hurricane. And you have to have flexibility in your budget to deal with these kinds of catastrophes. And some extremists, most of them tied to the Koch brothers and other institutions, are pushing this constitutional convention idea, or some call it a convention of states. And they're getting closer and closer, because you only need 34 states, and they claim to have 29. What we released this summer are behind-the-scenes documents from an open records request regarding ALEC that show that these groups are at each other's necks on the legality of their strategy and on the counts, and how these counts, how they're counting things. So I think it's a really important trend we need to keep an eye on, especially because Wisconsin's third Koch brother, Eric O'Keefe, has been involved in this. And Eric O'Keefe seems to have endlessly deep pockets, and being he's a very influential libertarian in the United States, he seems to have endlessly deep pockets. So they're trying to, you know, create a constitutional convention where once one is called, we haven't had one since George Washington presided, folks. And once one is called, it's sort of all bets are off. We don't know how it would operate. We don't know if they could touch every amendment, or if they would just be restricted into sticking in a balanced budget amendment.
Well, that one's bad enough.
That one's bad enough because it would throw the United States into recession and cripple our ability to deal with the future. But rewriting a lot of these amendments, having the Koch brothers rewrite a couple amendments is not the way America really wants to go, I don't think, if you're a Republican or a Democrat. So it's something we're keeping an eye on at Exposed by CMD, and we hope folks will keep an eye on it with us.
All right. This is not... This is not free to get all this work done. You have to pay people to do this research. If people want to help your efforts, because the corporate media doesn't pay attention to these issues, how do they go about it?
Well, we would really appreciate it. We're in a fundraising season this season. And if you go to exposedbycmd.org and click on the donate button, you can make a donation to us. And right now we are selling some books as a donation fundraiser, and you'll find those books on our front page.
Mary Batari from the Center for Media and Democracy, thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
Thanks for having me, Sly.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.